Hello, and welcome to episode number 84 of the Three Drinks In podcast. In this episode, we talk about the film King Arthur, A Legend of the Sword, and wait for Mr. Jude Law to show up and talk about his role in the film. Before we get to any of that stuff, though, I want you guys to head over to iTunes, and I want you to hit that subscribe button. This way, you never have to miss an episode. They just get delivered right to you. And also, while you're there, if you could do us a huge favor and leave a rating, we'd really appreciate that. 5-star ratings, most appreciated. You don't have to leave a review if you want to. That's great. But, you know, just the rating would be fine. If you want to follow us on Twitter, we are at 3DrinksInPod, at the number 3DrinksInPod. On Instagram, we're at 3DrinksInPodcast. We got the Facebook page, and in any questions, concerns, comments, complaints, etc., you can send those over to 3DrinksInPodcast@gmail.com. I want to thank you guys who answered our online polls on Twitter. There'll be more of those moving forward, so keep a lookout. All right, here we go.
Old woman!
Man!
Ma'am, sorry. What knight lives in that castle over there?
I'm 37.
What?
I'm 37. I'm not old.
Well, I can't just call you man.
You could say Dennis.
I didn't know you were called Dennis.
Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?
I did say sorry about the old woman, but from behind you looked...
What I object to is you automatically treat me like an inferior.
Well, I am king.
Oh, king, eh? Very nice. And how'd you get that, eh? By exploiting the workers. By hanging on to outdated imperialist dogma, which perpetuates the economic and social differences in our society.
Got that kind of like that raspy, you know, FM radio voice from the 1950s going on right now.
Sexy.
Well, yes, it's just being tired.
Oh.
I don't know.
What are you drinking there?
This is a Brooklyn brown ale. Your favorite. Actually, you might like this brown ale because it's the least brown ale I've ever had.
It's more of less sepia ale.
It doesn't remind me at all of... What's that?
More of a sepia ale.
It doesn't remind me at all of Newcastle.
Oh, okay. Oh, Newcastle.
Which I know is your favorite.
Oh, it's like drinking warm tar. Ugh. I hate Newcastle. Sorry, Newcastle fans. It's just... Ugh. Like, it makes that face like... You know, where your jaw like goes back like a snake. Like...
It's the only beer that I know of that is sold in an entirely clear bottle.
Because it's so dark?
I don't know why. I mean, every dark beer I've ever had comes in a dark bottle. I mean, I don't know of a single beer besides Corona and Landshark, which have no flavor anyway.
Right.
To be sold in a clear bottle, and there's a reason for that, because you don't want the light to screw with the flavor of the beer, which it does. Mm-hmm. You know, like they say that milk actually shouldn't be sold in even translucent containers, because the light kills all the, like, well, it doesn't kill the vitamins, but it somehow renders them inert. Mm. So if you can buy milk in like one of those, you know, cardboard containers, of course they're more expensive that way.
Yeah, so. I was just gonna say that's how they get you.
Yeah, that is how they get you. Mm-hmm. All right, so Jude Law is not here yet.
No, we're not Mr. Jude Law.
Invited Jude Law to come and talk to us about the King Arthur, Legend of the Sword.
Yeah. First of a 6 planned movie series about King Arthur and his knights. Bet you didn't know that.
I did, actually.
Oh.
And I had heard a rumor that some guy in Hollywood, one of those Hollywood fat cats, went around the studios and he walked into Universal and said, I've got an idea for you. And it was all about King Arthur and, you know, whoever else. And then he went to Disney and was like, have I got an idea for you? And it was all about Robin Hood. And then this is a rumor I heard on a different podcast where they were saying like some jackass just walked around and sold treatments to all the studios covering all the old fashioned, you know, Anglo-Franco myths
and legends.
we kind of rehash them again into movies. By the way, what are you drinking over there before we get into this?
I'm drinking a beer. The Truth Imperial Ale from Flying Dog.
The Truth?
Yes.
Imperial. What's the ABV on that bad boy?
I think it's pretty high. 8.7.
Yeah, I would say so. That's pretty.
So I should probably be careful because I didn't know that when I opened it.
Yeah, whenever you see the word imperial.
Here's the thing with King Arthur. Please stop me if I start to do that.
Is it on my bottle? They usually are now. But
are they? I'm surprised it's on here. I was going to just make up a number, and the number I was guessing was like not that high. So it's not what I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, mine's 5.6, so I'll be all right.
Well, the other drink I...
Too many of those, and you're in trouble.
Yeah, that's all right.
You know who makes a great Imperial IPA is Captain Lawrence. They have something called a palate shifter.
Yeah, their stuff's good.
Because IPAs can really just punch you right in the gut, but you have to be really careful with them. This one you have to be really careful with because it doesn't do that. It doesn't have that kind of like, this is alcohol kind of flavor. It's much more mellow than that.
Well, that's like when we talk about the Two Roads Brewing in Connecticut and they have the Road to Ruin, which is like a double IPA.
Yes, it is.
And that tastes a lot like this Imperial IPA, but it's twice as strong. So like, I remember that one time you and I were hanging out and we had a bunch of them.
Really,
and it was really it was a mess. So
yeah,
so watch out for those. My friend like to say,
the next day I had a thirst you could photograph.
I spent,
which really makes no sense.
No, of course,
but it's really funny.
I spent a year there one night. Whoa,
I have a thirst you could photograph.
Like caramba. So this guy was bouncing around with treatments for old legends, huh? Had nobody ever heard that they'd done these movies 8 million times already?
Yeah, no, that seemed to have escaped many of their attention. I mean, look, this goes back to everything we've been saying about trends in Hollywood. They don't make new stuff. And if they do, you know, generally it's either... Like, you find that at the Oscars, new stuff, relatively new ideas. But even then, they're tried. And, you know, they're either about Hollywood or they feature a poor gay black boy or, like, you know, something that people can really kind of glom onto. They don't really embrace totally new and standalone kind of ideas. Mm-hmm. And there's really nothing more sort of classic than King Arthur.
Right.
And it's just, like, Beowulf, that didn't pan out, like...
No, I saw that. That wasn't very good. Yeah, and it's sad because they're always like, oh, we're like Robin Hood. Like, oh, they're doing Robin Hood for the 100th time. Oh, they're doing King Arthur again. And usually it's an older critic who'll be like, well, they haven't done that right since like Errol Flynn in 1942 or whatever it was. I'm like, well, most people weren't alive back then who are watching movies now. And the ones they do now aren't any good. So like... To be fair, I am still waiting to watch a good Robin Hood movie.
Yeah.
You know, like they haven't done a good one. The Disney cartoon. Sure, it's a classic, but not with actual humans, you know?
Right.
So I don't mind that they keep trying. It's because they haven't gotten it right.
Well, as we're waiting for Mr. Law to show up, I'm looking at the... I just Googled, you know, list of media based on Arthurian legend, and so adaptations. Mm-hmm. I guess these are films. Yeah, these are all films. They began 1904.
Ah, the first talkie.
No, they weren't talkies. It was a film called Percival. And
by talkie, I mean a guy stood near the projector and just told everyone what was happening.
Yeah, no. It was, I don't know what the hell it is. But anyway, but it's it's a 1904 American silent film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, they've been
based on the opera by Richard Wagner.
Oh yeah, they've been doing this forever.
Yeah, I mean it goes. So like, I'm trying to think of this one that I know. Gawain and the Green Knight from the 70s, and then First Night, 1995, with Sean Connery and Richard Gere.
I think that's the first one I ever saw.
I think, yeah, that might have been the first one that I bothered to see.
And that was zero Merlin in that one.
Yeah, absolutely no Merlin.
They went the no Merlin route on that, so.
Yeah, which was fine, you know. It was a
love story, first and foremost, which is why I didn't like it when I was 10. I was like, man, this is dull.
I remember it being very clean.
Yeah.
Like, everyone was sort of like, you know, they all just kind of looked very kind of spotless. Nobody was dirty and just looked kind of silly. And there's a whole bunch of crap that I don't, you know, I have no idea what it is. But the only one that I recall is the one with Keira Knightley, where she's wearing almost nothing, and was it Clive Owen? Mm. Yeah, where they totally kind of, he was a Roman officer rather than a medieval knight. So they changed the setting, and they really tinkered with that one a lot. That one didn't do very well. But Stellan Skarsgård, Ray Winstone's in that one. Yeah, no, it was kind of too off. And then, of course, Transformers: The Last Knight apparently is based off of.
This is the second week in a row I had to watch that trailer. And I just sat there like, I want to just punch everyone in the theater right now for this movie.
I really enjoy the fact that there aren't too many trailers at the theater I go to. It's really nice. There's like 6 or 7 minutes.
Oh, half an hour. Again.
I've gotten there kind of late both times.
Oh, man.
And they're like, yeah, no, the previews just started. You've got 6 minutes, she said to me. I'm like, that's it? Great.
That is not a lot of time. Although, oddly enough, this, I went to see this as well during the day, because that's usually when I go to movies. This had more people at it than Guardians of the Galaxy 2. Like, I expected no one to be in the theater, because the movie's been out a little while.
I kind of did, too.
Yeah, I walked in, I'm like, oh, there's people here. I can't look at my phone now.
Actually, I spent the entire time taking notes on my phone.
Oh, did you?
Well, I turned on, like, the dark mode or whatever, and I was able to kind of do that pretty. I mean, I was, like off in the back corner. I wasn't really. The theater is so small, there's no bad seat.
Yeah.
Which is kind of nice. But yeah, so there's been an ass ton
of
these movies.
So what did you think of King Arthur, Legend of the Sword?
All right, well, we'll try to hash this out before Jude arrives.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what he thought. He looked bored, too.
If
I had to be honest with you.
He's like, I only really want to wear bathrobes, is what he said to the guys. Yeah. That's all you should put.
Can
me
I get
into.
A black hat to go with my black outfit?
Yeah, like, so we'll take a look. We'll take a look at our Twitter poll, which received a total of one vote.
Oh, really? Who was that? Who voted?
It wasn't me. Was it you?
It was me, because I saw it with like time. 20 minutes left. I'm like, you should probably get one vote.
All right, guys. This is really
slacking on the
fun.
Twitter here, everybody.
Everyone should get in on this. I received a lot of notifications for likes for the Instagram post of the Twitter.
We screenshotted the Twitter poll.
So, I screenshot it. Just because I need them to know, because we have a lot of good feedback on Instagram. I appreciate all of you who are liking our posts and. While you're already on social media,
keep doing that.
jump over to Twitter and just because if I could do this entirely through Instagram, I would. I tend to like that better. There's no like limit on hashtags, which is sort of nice. But in Twitter, you got to be very economical with your use of letters.
That's true.
But your choices were fantastic, decent, interesting failure, or absolute dreck. And the correct answer was indeed interesting failure.
Woo!
So kudos to Phil, the one vote.
I'm going to celebrate by drinking a beer.
Yeah, there you are. But yeah, that's kind of what I would have said had I voted well. This was an interesting failure.
Mm. Why is
not
that
a good movie?
Failure.
Why is it a failure? Because by the end of the movie, like at some point, I literally just kind of went, and I don't care anymore. Like it, I think it.
Yeah, that is absolutely.
After the guy dies,
it sucks that we agree all the time. Well, we don't, But when we do, it's like, oh, you know, these two guys, I wish they would disagree more to make it. But at the same time, yeah, I was like an hour in. I just went, I don't care. Whatever, yeah. Man. Like I don't care.
I was relatively hooked into this. They sort of like they had me. I wasn't, you know, fishing around. Like it was, I could understand it. I didn't always get it right away. And I'm not a huge fan of this guy's particular directing style. But I sort of liked how it started off, and he was abandoned as a child. They don't quite figure out how. That was just kind of floats away gracefully in the boat, and, you know, they do his whole life in 30 seconds. Mm. I mean, the way that I know that there were problems with the film was that I have a lot of questions in my notes.
Okay. Such as what?
The opening scene, you know. It says, why didn't you do that in the first place? So there's this huge battle going on with all these two giant elephants. They're swinging things and they're throwing fireballs that are disintegrating people. And when all looks lost, Arthur's dad just goes, here, hold my beer. And he grabs Excalibur and he runs and jumps on the side of the elephant and busts inside and goes, I'm here now to do the thing I'm supposed to do.
I got this.
And he's, I don't know what he does in there, but it's very successful.
Yeah, that's true. And then it cuts away. I'm like, I guess he chopped his head off.
Yeah, and then they do the whole funeral thing I didn't know what that was right away. Like, so then that was sort of the thing, was that you watch it and you go, huh, I wonder what I'm looking at right now. I really have no idea. They haven't bothered to tell me yet. And then within 5 minutes or even 30 seconds, they'll tell you what you just saw. I find that very disorienting. Mm-hmm. Like, it can work, like, when things happen simultaneously. When I tell you about the plan that we're going to do, and then you watch it unfold kind of at the same time. That's worked before. I'm not sure if there's a name for that kind of storytelling. If it's like simultaneous, you know, past and present storytelling or present and future storytelling, but it can be effective because you're watching something be concocted and worked out, and at the same time you're seeing its execution almost right away. There's no lag time. It's a very effective device to kind of speed the whole thing along. But what happens here is, like, things happen that you're not aware of. Some guy shows up and says, what happens? And then they talk their way through the whole goddamn thing. Hmm. Like, one of the guys on the weekly Substandard podcast, which I listen to a lot, there's two guys that saw this, and they argued about it a lot. And the one guy said it was kind of crappy. His name is Sonny Bunch. He's a film critic. And the other guy was like, oh, no, it was pretty good. It wasn't great, but it was good, and this is why. And one of the things he said was that Guy Ritchie shows you, he doesn't tell you. Which is a sort of a standard maxim for filmmaking, which is just nonsense. It's an absolute garbage. All they do is talk. Like, they show a lot of stuff too, but, you know, all they do is talk. So I had a lot of questions in the writing, you know, in my notes, because, you know, I didn't know what was going on at the time. Like, why does evil Jude Law kill his wife?
Oh, you don't have to.
They tell you why later.
Yeah, later, yeah.
But, like, it's sort of a big deal. And it informs a lot of what's going on, and you really don't know what's happening until, I don't know, another half an hour or so into the story. Mm-hmm. So that doesn't create mystery to me. It just creates confusion.
Okay.
So, by the way, Treasury Secretary... Stephen Mnuchin was one of the producers of this film.
Oh.
Yeah, him and Steve Bannon had a lot of money in Hollywood. Hmm. So thanks a lot, Trump.
Yeah, well spent, I guess.
Yeah, quite a bit. $175 million, you said?
And I think they said they're going to lose, what, $150
million? I mean, as much as I find that stuff kind of interesting, I also know that Forrest Gump is still in the red.
Yeah.
So
I think of it only in terms of, like, how much they spent and how much it costs in advertising versus what they come in, like, ticket sales. Yeah. Because you have to look at it sort of that way, or you'll just drive yourself nuts. Like, I'm not an accountant, so I don't know how Hollywood books work, but there's a lot of finagling. But they always can tell you when they're like a flop that bad. Well, they'll be like, it was bad, dude. A key grip lost his job. Like, whoa.
Well, you know, well, that's the thing too about those. Like, when they have those, they don't really have them anymore. But when they used to have those ads, where some lowly lighting gaffer will stand in front of you holding a bunch of cables and say, you know, if you pirate these videos, my kids can't eat protein this week. And
they fired his ass too.
But I'm thinking to myself, then why do they spend so much time not making money in movies? We're like, you know, everyone who is anybody gets their cut of the gross, not cut of the net, because there never is a net.
Right.
They structure it in such a way that they, so like, don't tell me that you have to fire all these, you know, these carpenters and these peons when you're driving around in a Rolls Royce, and the movie never made any money, apparently. Yeah.
How many MyBox do you need?
Seriously. So. Don't guilt my ass into this. Anyway. So it starts off, you know, the flashbacks and the odd stuff aside, you know, I like that he's not a gangster per se, but he's sort of, you know, he works in the underground of Camelot, or is it Camelot or is it Londinium?
He lives in Londinium, which is it's not Camelot.
Right.
Although they look the same because I think they only had one set.
Yeah.
As far as I can tell.
I don't think I knew that. I think I thought that they only went to Londinium at the end.
Yeah, but that's where he's from. Like, he sailed all the way down the river away from Camelot.
Right, and then to Londinium, and then went back to Camelot after he... So they catch him in Londinium.
So he leaves Camelot as a baby. He grows up in Londinium. You know, a lot of stuff goes down. They take him to Camelot to pull the sword.
Right.
And then they go back to Londinium to assassinate the king, and then they go back to Camelot. They only go to those two places. And then there's like the caves in between somewhere where the resistance is or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, the resistance.
That was never made clear to me exactly.
Yeah,
so,
no,
okay. Yeah. A lot of air punching in the beginning there. Not quite sure what that was about.
Air punching? When they were fighting?
When he wakes up and he's all like done with the fighting, and he's just doing the montage thing, and then he's just like, I'm going to punch the air.
Oh, yeah. He's angry. He's an angry dude. I like that montage. I'm like, oh.
The montage was...
We're going through his entire life. Okay.
Yeah, it was fine.
Quickly. Very quickly. Like, you really had to pay attention.
Yeah, my note for that was, boy, that might have been interesting had that been the movie and not a montage.
But, yeah, so, you know.
My notes here are so strange. But, yeah, so good parts of it were the fighting was, like, there's really two halves of the film, I feel. Mm-hmm. Like, the first half of the film is okay. You know, you get a sense of who he is and how he deals with people. The guy Ritchie-ness of the film isn't overwhelming. There's a little bit of it when they're joking with the guy, the sergeant in the guard, and comes to talk to them, and they go over all the different people's names, and they're kind of being quick and funny and very kind of like Aaron Sorkin light about the speed of the dialogue. And then, yeah, okay, so fine. They capture him, they bring him, he takes the sword out of the stone, knocks him out, and he's sitting there in the cell with Jude Law, who's still not here yet. And that's kind of a creepy scene. And they just, everything's going fine. And then about halfway through, like, I think it's when they go to assassinate the king in Londinium, the story just kind of grinds to either gets weird, frenetic, and then stops. And then, like, the last act of the film, they really go full Merlin, and there's a lot of confusing crap that doesn't make any sense whatsoever. Mm-hmm. So it's maybe a little bit more than half of the film is good. So the first act is fine. The second act begins to drain on you. The last act is just garbage. Mm-hmm. It really is. So, I mean, but there's stuff in there, and I'm watching it, and I'm going to myself, there's a movie in here that's watchable. You know, somewhere in all this, you know, this nonsense is a decent story, and even in, that even has some of the fantastical elements to it. You know, you can keep the, some of the Merlin in there.
Yeah, I mean, I was watching it, and then the very first scene, the first 15 minutes, you know, they give you the reading and the backstory, like the mages are fighting the humans, and there's the mages on the back of an enormous elephant smashing through Camelot and shooting fireballs. And I was like, okay, that's what we're up with. That's what we're dealing with right here. Giant elephants, like, you know, it sets the stage, it sets the tone. I'm like, okay, it's a King Arthur movie with magic. Fine, whatever.
Yeah, it's okay.
Yeah, and but you're right. Like, I didn't hate this movie. I was like, all right, this was something. I didn't want to walk out.
Yeah, and I mean, there were individual scenes that were really good. Mm-hmm. And there were, and some of them were even strung together side by side to make almost, you know, like an entire act of the film. If you look at it in a standard three-act kind of way, yeah, like I didn't hate it because there are parts of it that were kind of enjoyable. I've forgotten what a lot of them are, though, because there was so much confusion with regard to the rest of it that, like, I'm sitting here going, I saw the film literally 24 hours ago. And I,
yeah, not the some most of the good stuff is, memorable thing.
Yes, and like I'm sort of going, oh, you know, this is kind of cool. I wish the rest of the film was like this.
Yeah, I thought it was a little too frenetic, like that's Guy Ritchie's style. Like, yeah. I don't know, have a good way to get through this scene, but I'll do it quickly so you won't notice.
I mean, he was less Guy Ritchie here than he was in like the Man from U.N.C.L.E.
Yeah, and he was even less than he was like in Snatch.
But like that. But you can do that in Snatch,
because right?
It's an original thing. Like you're bringing yourself. It's like whenever, what's his face is in a movie, like Will Smith.
Yeah,
like Guy Ritchie is the Will Smith of directors.
Will Smithing everywhere.
Yeah, you know, he even in like serious dramas, like what was it, the Pursuit of Happiness, which was, you know, based on a true story. He still has a line in there that's totally Will Smith. Mm-hmm. You know, like, and the same thing with Guy Ritchie. You can't, he can't make another kind of movie.
Right.
You know, and that's why, but like, but even Tarantino can make another kind of movie. You know?
Sure.
Well, I'm not a big Tarantino guy.
Tarantino's very good at aping other people, but Guy Ritchie is Guy Ritchie.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And I'm fine with him throwing more, you know, Mordred and magic and, but I'm not sure what he was trying to do here. Like, I think the weakest part of the movie was Arthur.
Yeah.
Because you're right. The first half an hour, 40 minutes when you meet him, he's grown up in the brothel and he takes care of everybody. And he's always, he's ambitious. He kind of like runs an underground, you know, he's got money. He's got people that help him, you know.
He's smuggling things.
Yeah. Why make enemies when you can make friends? But then as the movie goes, like, he's also kind of like a womanizer, but he also protects women a lot, and he doesn't want to be King Arthur, but he knows he has to be. And
like, his revenge motivation is consistent, but kind of weak at the same time.
Yeah, along with, you know, he's not here, but along with Jude Law, where I'm evil. Why? Because I am. Don't you see the black cloak? God! Just like, I'm like, why is he evil again?
I think his whole thing was that he was trained, he was sent, there was like a whole thing, but he was sent by Merlin to go train with the mages.
Yeah, I can.
And he becomes seduced by their power.
Okay. Because him and.
That was it.
Him and Mordred were the only two mages that did that, where they were saying, like, well, most mages are good. Okay. Yeah, that's pretty weak motivation.
And, like, wasn't it like he teamed up with Mordred to. Like, he was. He told Mordred, if you know, we'll take over Camelot and then that'll be good. Mm-hmm. And in reality, he was just using that as an excuse to start like a genocide with the mages.
I think.
It happens really fast. But in the beginning, after Arthur does his thing where he kills the elephants, he says, all right, that's it, no more purges.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, that, and that was like 3 minutes, and that really could have been a little longer.
Oh my! There's so much information you have to get out of that scene.
And I got a lot. Like I got it when I was watching it, but like we said, the movie's not really memorable, and I'm just sort of remembering it now. Like, yeah, that's right. He did say that. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you know, it's what's his face? Evil. I can't think of Jude Law's character name. So we'll call him
Vortigern.
Evil Jude Law.
Yeah, Vortigern.
What? Vortigern. Yeah. Or you know. Hitler. Did you catch the Heil that they were doing?
Yes.
Yeah.
I did. They always do it with a fist instead of a hand, though.
Oh, no. His hand was open.
No, I thought they were doing the...
No. No. Open fist. It was a real...
Oh,
it was
Steve one of those... Bannon.
Yeah. Seriously. There was a one of those really stupid shows on the Freeform, is it? Or I don't know what it is. It's
the old ABC Family or the new ABC Family?
I think so. It's the one with girl played Lizzie McGuire back in the can't think of her name. Anyway, but it's not that good. But I'm watching it with my wife, and there's this one line where like you know the show's about a woman who's over 40 pretending to be 26 to get a job in I think publishing. She's trying to be hip and cool, and that's like the whole you know point of the show. And she gets, she injures her arm and gets 40-year-old shoulder, it's called. It's like, her secret's kind of out. And they go to the doctor, and she goes, Doc, is it going to be okay? And he says, well, if you don't have to raise your arm above a Heil, you'll be fine.
Jeez.
And, like, most of the show is really stupid and has too many vagina jokes for my taste, but that was hilarious. If you don't have to raise your arm anything higher than a Heil, you'll be fine.
Hachi machi.
You know, it's like that old joke, Doc, it hurts when I do this, said Hitler. Mm. Well, then don't do that.
God.
Anyway, so there was a Heil going on in there. What'd you think of the music as a small side note?
It was fine.
I actually liked it.
I thought it fit in with the rest of it fine.
Because, like, I don't know if you recall the film Something Night.
First Night? No. The one
no.
with...
fuck. What's that guy's name?
I don't know. I'm drinking 8.7% beer here. Heath Ledger.
Heath Ledger. Thank you. Can't think of the name of that movie. But, yeah, he plays a knight. And, like, they use, like, modern music.
Right,
as the soundtrack, and that was kind of like, ooh, the kids will come see it. We've got Queen in the soundtrack.
Yeah,
this is like 1998 or whatever, or you know, even later than that. But this was, I thought, kind of a nice balance. It was sort of like, you know, what Bela Fleck would sound like if he was, you know, in a like a death metal band.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so. Like sort of like heavy strings and percussion, dun dun dun. Kind of. It was good. I felt it kept it. It was consistent with the look of the film.
Mm-hmm.
So if it had like a sing songy kind of Danny Elfman score, it would look pretty stupid.
So yeah, I thought Arthur was the weakest. I think they also had a lot of trouble with what they were gonna do once they got him. Like, there's a whole like. Jude Law is the bad king. He doesn't do a good job. He's building a big tower to be the most powerful wizard. And there's like a resistance of people who oppose him. And these resistance people recruit Arthur to help them. And they do it in a montage of, well, what should we do? Well, we should blow up his palace and steal his money and steal his wine and, you know, just basically mess up everything for him. And that's done in a montage.
Yeah.
And then after that, I'm like, all right, well, now what do we do? Like, because you know how it ends. He's going to kill him with the sword, and he becomes the king. So, like, I'm like, how are we going to get there? And it would have been interesting to see, you know, them doing these things, like not having a cavalry charge to the gates, maybe something like a terrorism kind of thing or, you know, political upheaval, that kind of thing. But... they do all that in a montage, and then it becomes, we're storming the gates now, you know?
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, okay. So, like, once I knew they were doing that, I just checked out. Because you know how that's going to end. You know, yeah, like, so that whole, like, assassination thing they were going to do first, We're like, well, we'll assassinate him and we'll have him come visit us. And I'm like, well, this isn't going to work. You know, it's got to end in a knockout, drag out fight. So, like, that whole, I mean, and that scene's long. It's like a half an hour. And I was just like, whatever, let's go, let's go. Like, I was really impatient. Yeah.
Like, the guys who kidnap him, who he later makes his knights, they give you the air of competence, but they actually don't have any.
Yeah.
They really don't know what they're doing.
The ones that were used to be his father's friends that are the resistance guys?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, they're not good. They've been losing all this time.
And so when Arthur, you know, comes along and has his granite, like, they don't, like, nothing, like, they're very unsuccessful most of the time. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until the end, and we can get to that later because it's just a total just cocked hat. But yeah, they're just very ineffectual for most of the film. And you don't really know. And, like, the other things happen really fast. Like, it's just, it totally goes off the rails. Let me just go over some, like, all right. So, in my notes here, they had rodents of unusual size. Did you catch that?
Rodents of unusual size?
When he goes to, like, the underworld and...
Oh, well, that's a whole different... Yeah.
I mean, weirdo acid trip.
The giant snakes.
Giant snakes is weird. Also, then that guy's like a super archer. I have all these just crazy. And then at this point, he goes, you know, what is the plan? Mm-hmm. Like, there isn't, like, you're right. Like, once they, you know, they fail to assassinate him, they realize this isn't going to work. Well, we'll just fuck things up for ourselves.
Yeah.
You know, I'll shoot this guy who's kind of a jerk. And then it'll cause chaos. And then they get to run around and I can't see anything while they're running. It's all shaky cam. And then they had this weirdo, like, what was with that massive fight scene they had in the arena there? I couldn't see anything that happened in.
I think that was supposed to be that he's starting to, like, embrace his destiny with the sword. Because the sword is really, really important, even though it's kind of glossed over a lot. Like, well, it's powerful, but it's a big deal. And that was where he was trying to escape with everyone, and they wouldn't leave him. And he was like, well, I'll just have to stay behind then because I love my mates. But he still can't control it. He doesn't quite embrace his destiny. And so he slaughters everybody in, like, a slow motion montage with the sword and doesn't remember doing it. Like, he doesn't control that power.
Right. Like, that part I got. But just before that, when they start to fight, it's just a really badly directed action sequence that, I guess, it's supposed to contrast with, like, all of a sudden, like, the sword takes over and gets them out of the jam by killing all those guys.
Right.
And it looked like crap.
Yeah, all the action sequences
it bothered me.
That's why they're done in quick cut montages. Yeah. Don't look, I mean, too hard.
Yeah. And then I have, you know, really starts to drag after the chubby fat guy gets killed.
Yeah, he was in Humans, that guy.
Yeah, he's a good actor. I have to get to that second season, too. Sitting on the DVR.
He was very good in that as well.
Yeah, really good actor.
Well, you know, this is kind of like all those BBC shows where, like, the same 40 actors are in everything. So
yeah, it's a British production, I think.
Half those people are in Game of Thrones as well, so...
Yeah, I thought I recognized a few of them. I was like, you have to be in Game of Thrones. Just look at you.
Yeah, it's like, what, Jesus you Christ. Couldn't find anyone to do, like, a fake accent that's from Britain? But, yeah, no, things really started to drag.
Yeah.
Because you knew, like, okay, now we're just going to storm the castle, and of course he was going to win.
Yeah.
So.
And then I think I actually, I had a thing that I wrote, and I can't. It was, like, a really good question. And I wish...
Yahoo Serious Festival.
It didn't save, son of a bitch.
Oh.
But, gone. Something about Jude Law and the tower and completing the tower. I have no idea.
Oh. Why did he have to complete the tower? Completing the tower would have summoned the giant elephants.
Is that what it was?
Yeah. Arthur gets the vision of, like, what will happen if...
the Galadriel vision? Yeah, that one.
Yeah, which, you know, all these characters telling him it's his destiny, and it's like, you know what, let's just give him a vision and he'll do it. and the Lady of the Lake. And she says, this is what will happen if he completes the tower, and there's the giant elephants. And you're like, oh, the elephants with the fireballs. Right, right, right. Okay. Now I get it.
Yeah, they're pretty dangerous.
Yeah, so he doesn't have any of that because the tower's not quite done. All right.
Oh, okay.
Even though he has those sea squid ladies to help him.
Yeah, they're pretty hideous.
Mm.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah, so the movie was a little disjointed, and it sort of like covered those things with a frenetic pace and hope you didn't notice. And it was like, well, I noticed. Why are we doing this? Okay.
Hmm.
I mean, it was, you know, you could follow it. It just...
Most of it, yeah. I wasn't always clear as to everybody's motivations for everything. And you know, the characters weren't always consistent. You know, mostly the guys that, you know, that kidnap him and the guys who he turns into the knights at the end, like, they don't always seem to... They have different skills. They have, you know, but they're good at them at some points and bad at them at others. And then there's the end. And the end sort of reminds me of that movie Blade years ago. So I don't know if you recall Blade, but like, you know, the vampire hunter runs around trying to kill vampires and this one guy trying to summon the, you know, the demon that's going to make him immortal or whatever. And like all the time you're setting up that this guy's kind of a weakling and he just needs to get this superpower thing to help to defeat Blade, and you kind of, you know, the ending fight somewhat, I don't know, anticlimactic, unsatisfying, because you know it's building to that, you can't avoid it, and you know that, you know, it's just super obvious as to what has to happen, and it happens just the way it's supposed to happen, and you go, oh, like, there's nothing new about that, and I don't know, I guess some movies can get away with that, but this one couldn't. That and the snake thing really pissed me off.
Oh, yeah, the snake thing.
So
that really, that was like the one time I was like, oh, come on.
I mean, that's when they really go the full Merlin and beyond.
Mm.
When, okay, the snake slithers in and he has the sword and then he cuts off the sword, the snake's head, and then the big snake comes in and tries to eat it. Like,
and not just the big snake, the huge motherfucking snake. That is so big it doesn't fit in the room. Like, its head literally smashes the doorway in, eats six or seven guards.
Not the bad guy, though.
No, and the bad guy gets away. And then the snake leaves, and I'm like, I'm just sitting here, like, stunned, like, what the fuck was that?
It's worse than the eagles in Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, it's just, what? I don't understand where that came
from.
Well,
my work here is done.
Yep.
What do you mean your work here is done? You didn't do anything.
Didn't I? Yeah, and then just disappears. I'm like, nobody saw that giant snake leave? Did he high-five everyone on the way out? Like, did you see that? That was awesome.
Yeah.
And like, I get that, like, the woman who's the mage can, like, sort of control animals, but... That's not a real animal. Snakes don't grow up to be the size of Mack trucks.
I mean, that's the snake when he goes into, like, the Upside Down.
Yeah, like the Deadlands, they call it, with all the giant weirdo animals that test him. And
did you see Stranger Things? Mm-mm. Oh, okay. That's a reference to the Upside Down.
Oh, that's like the alternate world with the monsters in it, right?
Yeah, you really have to watch that TV show.
I will. I will. I just discovered Fargo. I'm trying to get through that now.
Yeah. So, like, I didn't know you could bring back animals from there.
Yeah.
But apparently you can.
Good thing. That's one hell of a sword.
You should have brought back those ROASs.
Yeah.
And while you're at it, Andre the Giant.
Yeah, and shit. How about, like, an army? Like, just a bunch of dudes. Just bring them with you, because...
Yeah.
Yeah, so he brings this
snake that just buzz shit up and then hightails it.
Yeah, and then he fights Jude Law, who turns into this giant monster CGI guy.
Only because, so like, here's the thing. Like, I think my big question that somehow got deleted from my notes was just like, you know, we're spending all this time on the tower and this and that, but is like he still has to go to these like, you know, octopus ladies to get and has, he has to keep killing people he loves and to get this kind of magic power to be a real badass for 20 minutes or whatever else it is. And then like the secret weapon for Arthur is just confidence.
Yeah.
That's all it is. He's just
accepting his destiny.
Right.
Wow. We should say that with your pinky in the air. I guess.
I mean, Christ, is that lame?
Yeah.
And it's like, it's the same damn thing the whole time. And I guess it's like, oh, I'm going to do it for myself and not for them because I just want revenge because he's a jerk and he killed my dad.
But that doesn't come clear. That's not because, like, you see when he grows up in that montage in the very beginning of the movie, he beats up the people who beat up the whores. Like, he clearly cares for women.
Right.
And he cares about all of his mates. So, like, he's not a selfish prick unless he has to be, which is called bad writing.
Yeah. You know? It's just very inconsistent character. He's a jerk when they want him to be a jerk.
Right. Yeah, and other times he's completely noble, like willing to sacrifice himself. I'm like, okay. Like when they were going to chop his head off in the beginning. I'm like, well, here's a selfless bastard. I wouldn't do that. You know? I think that whole thing with Jude Law also could have been interesting. Okay, he kills his wife in the beginning for a power to destroy his brother, who's the king, Arthur's father. And then they tell him, like, as long as you kill the baby, you'll also be okay. And so he kind of, it becomes like an Oedipus thing where he's like, I have to do this, even though me doing it will probably cause it to happen. And then he goes and he kills his daughter at the end to get more power. I'm like, well, I'm pretty sure they didn't say that'll work. But.
Well, no, they told him it has to be the blood of a loved one.
Yeah.
Which is sort of kind of hazy because...
But shouldn't it work then? He did sacrifice his daughter.
Right. And I think that's sort of the... why is it that Arthur is better at this than his dad? Like, his dad had the sword. His dad didn't have any confidence issues.
Right. Like, they still have the same sword. So, like, how come it works the first time? Like, it's interesting the first time. I'm like, ooh, that's a sacrifice. Okay. He had to give something up.
Is it because he was distracted? His wife just got killed and his son is trying to escape? And like,
yeah, let's go with that. Sure.
Yeah.
Have a sip of beer. I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the fight as well was also like. Ugh.
It looked like a friggin' video game.
Yeah. No, I don't know why.
It looked like, you know, like if you get that extra guy and you go to that extra level in Mortal Kombat and you're fighting on like a floating river of lava or something, like that's what that looked like.
Yeah, like why do it that way?
Where were they?
I think they were, I don't know, never mind. The minute I started to speak, I'm like, you know what, this is probably not worth it. I think they were in that tower, but they weren't.
No, they were nowhere near I mean, there was the table. Table was there. Table's a big deal. Were they back in the Upside Down? Like,
I don't know.
I think they were because the table was there, but it wasn't the same place because there wasn't those like pillars. And we should really just...
How did they get into that tower before it collapsed? Here's a few things that no one understands at all. Yeah. Like the movie really started falling apart halfway through and never recovered.
No, it never got back.
You know, and enough of those things that add up, you're like, oh, this is not good.
Yeah. And it wasn't even, if there was any more or less Merlin than the beginning, because there was some Merlin in the beginning that worked fine.
Right. It wasn't about that. Like, it wasn't like they broke their own rules about magic and stuff like that. It was just that they didn't bother to write things correctly or direct them clearly enough. Yeah. So you were like, I think I know what's going on. Whatever. Here's a sword fight.
I mean, the other thing about this, too, is from like a director's standpoint is that Guy Ritchie directs Guy Ritchie movies because Guy Ritchie wants to do them. You know, he's one of those guys that will take an idea and then shepherd it through different studios and work with the writers and work with the actors. But this is just like they hired Guy Ritchie. You know, he was like a gun for hire for this one. This wasn't like a huge project. He has a producer credit, but then so do I, for Christ's sakes.
So this wasn't like a passion project for him? Like he wanted to do this?
No, I think they just said, do you want to do this next, you know, multi-million dollar feature film? And he went, yeah, all right, sure. Hmm. So, okay. I mean, I guess he has it in his contract that you have to let him Guy Ritchie all over the place if he wants to.
Well, but, I mean, if you shoot things a certain way, they come out that way. And like the big example, I think, of the past year was Fantastic Four by Josh Trank. He shot it a certain way, and the studio balked and was like, no, we cannot release the movie this way. And they just sent, like, you know, the boom mic guy to cut it and redo it and fix it, and he made it the worst movie anyone's ever seen, ever.
Yeah, I heard really bad things about that.
Oh, it was bad. But they said, like, if a director directs on almost, you know, 90% of the movie, it can't be fixed. It can only be broken some more and then taped together and handed out. Like, here you go. So I don't know how you would recut a Guy Ritchie movie to not be a Guy Ritchie movie.
Yeah, so exactly. And I mean, the editing in his films is generally kind of obvious.
Yeah.
Like, some people, like, you don't notice the edit. Like, in some movies, like Star Wars. You don't notice the edit in Star Wars. It just flows. It's a story. It bounces from one thing to the next. It's logical. But, you know, like other more, you know, more sort of aware films, I guess is the right word. You know, the editing, the choices made are like, oh, okay. You like, what do you call that movie? Boogie Nights. So a lot of really interesting choices. And I just watched this. There's a great scene in Boogie Nights when they go to rob that guy's house with John C. Reilly and Thomas Jane and Mark Wahlberg all getting this Corvette.
Yeah.
And they go to Alfred Molina's house. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they get there and it's this crazy scene, you know, where Molina's playing with the gun and they have, you know, coke and money lying around, and some guy's throwing firecrackers in the corner, scaring the shit out of everybody. And then, like, when things really start to go crazy, the camera just leans in and hovers on Mark Wahlberg's face for, like, 50 seconds. And all this dialogue and noise is happening behind him, but all you do is just stare at his face. That's pretty specific. I mean, like, and this is not that. This is, you know, a different kind of fast-paced sort of look here now thing.
Yeah.
But it's the same kind of thing. Like, the filmmaker is making a very obvious, unusual choice to put your focus somewhere for either a long or short period of time.
Right. Yeah. No. There's a language to cinema where Guy Ritchie wants you to focus on certain things, and also not. So, like, I don't want to show you Arthur growing up. I just want to do it real fast, and I don't want you to see him go on this journey with the sword in the Deadlands. We're just gonna, you know, do that quick. I mean, how many fight scenes can you really watch and stuff like that?
Yeah. Which of those things would you think I don't mind that they didn't drag you through every, you know, giant bat he fought. That was fine. I mean, it's kind of nothing really happens down there, too.
Yeah, he goes with the sword and then comes back with it.
And he can't do much more than before he left.
Right.
So that was kind of useless. But so I guess the question is, like, which of those montages do you think was, you know, contained the most interesting information, and could it have been drawn out to make more of the film? Or is it just good enough as it was, as a montage? Like,
I mean,
does that make sense?
I think the first two were good. So the first one, showing him growing up,
yeah,
gave you everything you needed to know, and it was interesting to watch. You know, like, I actually enjoy, like, okay, this is cool. Like, he's a little kid. He gets into trouble, but he also does the, you know, smart little things to build up his own money. He's got his own stash. And then he gets older, and he starts to beat up other people because, you know, now he's bigger and yada, yada.
And he has, a moral compass.
Yeah, and he's ambitious, and he still has his own money. But then they do the one where they're talking about, like, where were you today? And then they're talking to, like, the cop, who's basically, like, the head guard in their town. Right. And that's very much like Snatch, where they're just talking about what happened. Here's what happened. And they explain it, and it's some of it's voiceover. And you know, that could have been done in about 30 seconds, very boring, but it was just done in a very interesting way. And that's very Guy Ritchie. Yeah. And it was fun to watch that because it was funny. They were making jokes, you know, like you weren't supposed to take it that seriously. Yeah. So
they were good. Was there anyone that wasn't good as a montage that would have worked better? Like, I'm trying to think, like, the plan that they tried to concoct.
That plan didn't work out so well. Because
it didn't make any...
I didn't know if it was actually happening or not.
Yeah.
Because he was like, we're going to talk to these six barons and ask about their men, and you're going to get indignant, but not really, and it's going to be an act. And, like, they do the same thing, where, like, he's explaining it and they're cutting to it. And I was like, is this really happening, though? Because halfway through it stops, and that one was a little confusing. I wasn't quite sure what they were doing there.
I'm trying to think of the movie that used that. Was it I want to say Ocean's 11.
Ocean's 11. Where Ant-Man had a few montages like that were kind of like, huh? What movie is this all of a sudden?
Right. But like, there was one movie I saw, I can't freaking think what was it, but where they did that whole thing where they told you the plan at the same time that they were doing the plan.
I don't know.
It'll come to me eventually.
It's tough. You have to know what you're doing when you make cuts like that. You have to have a good movie editor. So.
Yeah. And they're interesting. I tend to like that.
If you do it right, it can be very interesting.
Because it moves everything along. It keeps you... Because there's nothing more boring than, here's what we're going to do. And then they talk their way through it.
Right.
As, like, here's what we're going to do, and then you're watching it happen as you're doing it. Like, because they'll cut back and go, is that going to work? And then you see, oh, it does work, that kind of thing. Like, you know, they have the choice to move the story along that way.
Right. And it's also, you know, like, you're just sort of, if you don't have a good surprise, it's also like, we don't want to just show you and then tell you how it happened, even though it wasn't very interesting.
Right.
So it's like, here's a funny way of telling you that it's kind of boring, but stick with us. We have to get through it.
So. this is a lot of information coming.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anything you particularly liked?
I like the music. I like the set design. Like, I think it looked really cool.
I also like the set. I also really like the costume design.
Yeah, like the production design, like the way the movie looked
good.
It wasn't like First Night where everyone had very brushed teeth. It was, you know, people were, you know, still kind of dirty. I like how they sort of referred to real places, like Londinium is what the Romans used to call London. They called it England. Mm-hmm. You know,
there were also like Vikings. And stuff.
So
I like their armor.
It was a good looking film.
I thought Excalibur was kind of whatever. Usually, you expect it to be like the biggest sword in the universe, but it was just like a regular sword that just had like runes etched on it or something.
Well, that's what the kid said, I think, at some point.
Yeah, I thought it'd be bigger.
I thought it'd be bigger.
Yeah,
yeah. Which is fine. It doesn't need to be that big. I remember. In Lord of the Rings, when, what's his face?
Aragorn.
Aragorn gets the giant sword at the end, like the one that, like his father's sword or grandfather's sword. And it was actually so long that he didn't know how to use it. Mm. The actor didn't know what to do with it.
Yeah, it's like, I think, and they give it to him and he takes it out of the sheath. He never puts it back in because it was so long that it was too hard to, like, his arms weren't long enough to put the sword back where it was supposed to go.
So no one's arm was long enough.
Yeah, if you notice, he never puts it back or unsheathes it. He always just sort of carries it with him.
Yeah. Whereas the sword that he was using for the previous two movies...
Perfectly fine.
That was like his buddy.
Yeah, it was just a normal sword. The production design was good. They looked dirty. They got a real Englishman who had bad teeth, except for Arthur, who had perfect teeth. You know, there was no love story in this. Did you notice? There was like barely any women.
Oh, come to mention. I mean, there was kind of a thing with the mage girl.
Yeah, but not really.
Because there was that scene where he captures who the boy, and the girl.
Yeah.
And he lets the girl go.
Yeah.
Okay. Kind of like, okay, well, you can go, and but tell him to be here by 2 o'clock or whatever it was.
Yeah, or I start on the boy, even though he's the only one I have now, because I'm letting you go.
Okay. Okay. Fun fact, that boy's name was actually Blue.
Really?
His real name is Blue.
Poor guy. That is unfortunate.
Well, he's in the pictures, so...
Yes, that's true.
Could be worse.
And the girl was good. It's just, you know, there wasn't... She didn't have anything to do except be cryptic.
Right, and sort of stand in for Merlin.
Yeah, I guess they're saving Merlin for the sequels that'll never happen.
Yeah, I read that article that you sent me about the...
The enormity of the flop that is this film.
Yeah. And I mean, look, the thing about movies that don't make money...
Yes.
Is that you can never predict what's not going to make money. That's, you know, that was William Goldman's thing, is that nobody knows anything.
Yeah.
So, like, all the stuff that happens in these films or in the making, like, it, you don't know until you go see it. And like, people go see bad shit all the time. Like, Transformers is still going to get really crap reviews, but it's going to make $1 billion. Mm-hmm. Same thing with the Fast and Furious. They're not going to be any good. It'll still make $1 billion. But, I mean, yeah, they have a franchise behind them that kind of propping them up. And this didn't. So
why do you think this one didn't do well?
I have no idea. And that's the thing, I can't even begin to say, because people either go or they don't. The only thing I can think of is that it opened up against, like, if we're talking about movie openings, I mean, you have nothing to go on. You hear what's good, you hear what's bad. You see a trailer for it, you know, like, it wasn't like it wasn't advertised. They spent money on it, on the advertising.
See,
but it opened up against a Marvel film, and that didn't help it at all. That's the only thing I could say, like, this is your direct competition.
I think,
and by the time, you know, you get to it. So, like, week one, when it first, or weekend number one, you say, okay, I'm going to go see Guardians 2 because I like Guardians 1, and I'll go see King Arthur next weekend. But by next weekend, now the buzz is out, and it's just like, listen, this is, you know, Boss Baby still did better than you did weekend 2 because everyone heard the bad buzz. But as far as the opening weekend goes, it's just that I can think of, not being an industry expert. You know, it's just who you open up against.
Yeah. It's like, I'm looking at all the movies that came out that weekend. You have Lowriders, Snatched with Amy Schumer, Seven Witches, The Wall, The Wedding Planner. I've never heard of any of these movies. But I think the advertising for this was not very good.
No?
Because I remember the first trailer I saw where it was like kind of dark and brooding, and it had the modern day music, and it had, you know, images of the guy playing Arthur, and he was wearing like a regular kind of coat, like a jacket. You know, I was like, oh, it's like a half-assed modern retelling of King Arthur with modern music or something. Like, I don't know. He's kind of like snippy and a bastard and whatever. And then the next trailer I saw, full Merlin, boom, magic fireballs, boom, magic sword, boom, evil Jude Law. And I was like, well, what is this? Is this the same? And I'm like, oh, it's the same movie. I didn't know that. So then I was just like really confused. I was like, oh, now I don't know what it is. And most people, I assume I'm most people, don't like to see movies they've never heard of, and they're not sure what they're going to see.
Right.
You know, and like, I was like, okay, it's PG-13 King Arthur movie. It can't be violent and it can't be this and that.
That's true. See, if it had gone R, would it have been better or worse?
I mean, they could have shown more.
Well, right,
but
that's it, though.
Yeah.
They got one fuck in there, right?
They did get one fuck. PG-13 always gets one.
Yeah, one fuck. Yeah,
and once you know that, you can't like unknow it, so you're like kind of waiting for it. You can get that stuff with Game of Thrones if you're desperate. You know, if you want to see boobs, you can watch Game of Thrones. Whoa.
Yeah.
But I didn't know what I was going to get with this movie.
I mean, if they had gone the full Thrones rather than the full Merlin, would it have been?
No. And I don't think it would have been any better.
No, well, yeah, probably not. But would it have made more money?
Oh, probably not. Because if I was, you know, if I was 14, this movie probably would have been awesome. But I'm 32, so yikes! You know, and I sat there thinking that, like, this would probably be great if I was a teenager, but it's not. It's boring, and I know this story already.
Did you catch David Beckham in the film?
Yeah. Oh, the one guy that couldn't act. Yeah, I caught him.
He played a guy named Trigger. Who the hell was Trigger?
So when Arthur goes to pull the sword out of the stone and he kind of like cuts the line, he's like, just what do I got to do to get out of this, you know? He's the guy that tells him, dude, put your hands on the sword and just pull it. And he's like, what, this? And like Arthur starts to like get woozy from holding the sword and he starts yelling, David Beckham's yelling at him. Like, dude, two hands, put your leg up, pull. Like he's that guy.
Yeah, yeah. He was the soldier.
He was horrible. Even with the fake, you know, battle scar makeup, I could tell, like, oh, that guy looks famous because he's too handsome for these people.
Yes, David Beckham is quite handsome.
And I read somewhere, too, they were like, I can understand you want to put stupid cameos in your movie, but that's, like, a really pivotal scene. Why would you put him there? Like, yeah. Peter Jackson didn't put himself as the guy putting the crown on Aragorn's head at the end of the Return of the King. You know?
Yeah.
Well, you can ask Guy Ritchie that, or Jude Law if he ever got here.
Yeah, that didn't happen.
No. I'm sensing a pattern with this podcast. Nobody comes to our podcast.
One of these days.
Yeah. Hey.
Right? They're bound to show up.
Someday it'll happen, and everyone will be like, I'm not going to listen, because they always say that.
Yeah.
You'll feel
sick. One of these days, you'll think we're full of shit.
Yeah. You know what I don't like when I hear certain podcasts where they like, we have a special guest, and the guy goes, oh, hi, it's great to be here. You know, like, oh my God, dude, stop. Your comedy is not funny.
Yeah, they did that on the Weekly Substandard with Michael Caine.
Oh my God.
With a guy who did not do even it wasn't even a terrible. Like, terrible was better than this.
It was giant snake terrible.
Yeah, it was giant snake terrible impersonation of Michael Caine. You should Google this later. It's two British guys talking about how Michael Caine sounds. And they both do, it's a British TV show. I can't think of the name of it. But if you just, you know, you can look it up on YouTube.
Yeah. Bob's and, your uncle, something like that.
Right, and they were arguing about who does the better Michael Caine impression.
Oh God!
And they're both really good. And so but like they're just, one of them is a bit more nuanced than the other one. You should find it later. It's really funny.
Yeah.
All right. So, do you have a three things for this film?
We haven't done that one in a while.
What's that?
Are we still doing that?
Well, yeah, we haven't done it in a while, but I like doing it.
Okay. So the thing you hated the most, it's always easy to get the first two. You know, what do you like the most? What do you like the least? Do you want to see more of this? Because they plan on doing like five more of these.
Okay. So the thing I liked the most, I think the thing I liked the most was what they did with Arthur. I think in general, like the first half of his arc was really good. Like how he was somebody who was important. Then he's always a really hard character to nail down. He's really boring. You know, that's why in most of these stories, it's Lancelot that kind of gets most of the play, because it starts off that like love triangle thing. The knights all have some kind of a flaw or personality quirk that can be exploited for a movie. But Arthur sort of doesn't. He has no, his whole thing is he's so good and he's so honest and true and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, watching that develop the way they did, where somebody who grew up, you know, in that little montage and became who he became, that was interesting to me. So it wasn't consistent, unfortunately, and it starts to fall apart once he gets captured by the the mage and those guys. But up to that point, that was this. You know, it had a very strong start. And the thing I hated the most was just the end of the movie. Like the last act of the film was confusing and inconsistent, and there's a giant snake in there for no reason. And yeah. I'll see more of these if they make them, first of all. But if they can do what they did with some of the Marvel spinoffs, which is just not to make the same movie again, but you know, if they're gonna make a movie about Merlin or about this guy or that guy, and if they can be kind of different, because they like if you could tell different stories in the same universe, then I might see it. But if it isn't clear from the advertising that they're doing that, then I'm not gonna go see this again. That'd be stupid.
Yeah, I don't want to watch it again. So
yeah, please, you can't make me.
Like I'd go to see it if like each night had his own movie.
Right.
You know, like I'm sure there's somebody out there somewhere who can tell me I'm wrong. I think in the actual like original legends and stories, Sir Gawain finds the Holy Grail. Not any of the rest of them. You know, and like shit, show me that movie. Show me the guy on the one part of the wedge of the round table that no one pays attention to, and that's the guy who finds it. Because I'd watch that movie. Like, I don't need to watch more about King Arthur, who is so boring. Or Lancelot, who, yes, we all know he betrays Arthur by sleeping with his woman and stuff like that. Like, what else you got? That was a big table. Who else is there? You know,
yeah.
Sir Harry, who made the cream puffs this time.
Sir Reginald.
Yes, yeah, Sir Reginald, who refuses to put the toilet seat down.
All right, that's how you'd go see the sequels. What was your best and worst?
My worst, I mean, the ending really sucked, but my worst would have to be Arthur, because he's just handled so poorly. He's so important to the story, and it was hard
he's the titular character.
Yeah, like he's supposed to carry this franchise, but it was just so hard to relate to him, because I didn't know what he was doing. Is he a good guy? Yeah. Is he a jerk? You know, is he selfish? Is he not? I don't know. It depends on what the scene needed. So I was like, every time he was on the screen, I'm like, what's he doing and why?
Yeah.
You know, like the black guy played by, what's his name? Dijamu? His name is hard to say. He was in Guardians 1.
Actually. I'm reading it right now and I can't. Yeah, he was the guy
Digimon
in the beginning.
Hansu.
Bedivere.
Yeah, that guy's great. And I knew exactly where he stood the whole movie. He was interesting. But Arthur was like the weakest. And I was like, I'm supposed to root for this guy, but it's hard to.
Yeah, he was hard to get. I mean, like, again, like they set him up pretty strongly. Mm. But then it just. They did not write him consistently throughout the entire. I mean, I didn't see. Sons of Anarchy. So I don't know, but it's possible he's just good looking.
He's okay. I wouldn't go. You see, I'm going to be fair. I'm not going to go by Sons of Anarchy because that was not a well written show.
People love that show.
They're wrong. That show is not very good. Like I sat and watched a few episodes, and I was like, "This is trying so hard to be Breaking Bad. It's not funny."
Yeah,
you know, it was. But he's a handsome guy. Don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. And he acted the hell out of this. But the problem was, what was he? Was he a nice guy or not? That was his problem. Yeah, he did a good job as an actor. That guy, Charlie Hunnam.
That's the thing. He was kind of working. You could see him working at it.
Yeah. No, he was.
It didn't
giving
look
it his
effortless.
All. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and he's not Laurence Olivier, for Christ's sake, but like...
Who is?
When you see someone kind of struggling through it, it's like, oh, you poor bastard. Like, you're not that good. You're okay, yeah. But you're not that good. And this material is not giving you any help.
Right. Like, you're not that good. And this material is worse than you. So how do you make this any better? I don't know. And I think the best was, you know, I mean, I was all in on the full Merlin, like on the world building and the set design and everything.
Yeah.
Like the giant elephants, the fireballs, you know. Yeah, it was a very believable thing. It was, and that's what made it so hard to watch when they did things out of character, you know. Like, I could totally believe that Camelot was the last stronghold and Londinium was this big kind of city that had an underground. And, yeah, I bought all of that. And then when they did stupid things, I was like, huh? Like, I cared, so.
Yeah. Speaking of, like, the set, I didn't get a sense of the size of the place.
Like, of Camelot?
Of either location. I mean, I guess because I was confused as to where they were half the time. But, like, I guess Londinium seemed larger, and like, but Camelot was like the city on the hill with the big tower.
Right.
And, like, it looked kind of like, you know, like a low-rent version of the place in Lord of the Rings, which we keep coming back to.
It's the Ur fantasy epic.
Right. The place, the end, the white city.
Minas Tirith?
Yeah, Minas Tirith. Yeah. Well, I was never going to pull that one out of my ass.
Good guess. Like, we would have been here all night.
that city looked huge.
Yeah.
And it just, you know, that's by virtue of Tolkien's description and the amazing production staff on that movie. Camelot looks very tiny.
Yeah, well, the thing
high
is,
up there, but
you didn't get a good sense of the people living there. If you watch the Lord of the Rings movies, you'll see there's a lot of reaction shots from, like, the local peasant. And
you're a man on the street.
Yeah, you know. you need those to set the stage. Who lives here exactly? Is it just faceless extras? And that's what happened in this movie.
Yeah.
But no.
It was almost none of that.
No, they didn't. Like, the set looked good. It was... You could just tell it was filled by people who were hanging around the craft services table, and it was like, just wear this robe, you look fine.
Yeah. You know? One of the most effective parts of the Lord of the Rings movies is actually in the Two Towers, when during the Battle of Helm's Deep, and they cut down to the caves.
Exactly, right. That's what I'm
talking
about. You
see people sitting there in the cave. Yeah, like that. There was none of that in this movie.
Yeah,
what was at stake besides? It's obvious this guy's a bit of a jerk, and he has a warped sense of what power is.
Yeah, what exactly did he do to you?
Yeah,
besides being a jerk.
There was really nobody in this movie that you could connect to.
Right,
and they didn't help you by not having any of the local peasant folk be people you could connect to.
Yeah, so there's no people. And then you have Arthur, who's impossible to connect to because you're not sure where he stands. There's no love interest except that woman who doesn't speak. And all of his friends are completely interchangeable.
Right.
Like, what's the difference between Bedivere and Bill or Percival? Nothing. There's just one more guy that's helping him out. So I'm like the dad is the one who... He died because he had a son. Okay, I guess that's sort of sad. But the rest of them, I mean, they were all just bearded white guys, except the one black guy.
And I think they were trying to make Arthur that character for the audience, that character that helps you enter into the mystical world, because he has one job, which is running a whorehouse.
Right.
And then he gets thrown into this other kind of, you know, where all of a sudden he's the king. And so you're supposed to be, like, on the journey with him. But he's never human. He's always... You know,
like
the story. The story begins with him in some kind of a fantastical situation, and it continues with him being. You know, it takes a special kind of person to endure his childhood and come out the way he does. That's not going to make him relatable to anybody,
right? And so, like, that's the whole thing. Like, here's the sword; it gives you powers, and even he doesn't know how to handle it.
Whoa!
But then he does, You know, yeah. Okay.
he figures out that his dad is the stone.
Yeah.
And that was pretty fucking stupid, by the way.
Yeah, and I was like, why would he do that? Why would he just turn himself into stone?
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense.
I mean, I get it, but why did he do that? just keep fighting.
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, I would have loved to know what Jude Law thought about it, because he was sleepwalking through a lot of it, it seemed.
Yeah. You know, even like his leg firmly planted on like the, you know, the arm of the throne. I was like, really?
Oh, yeah. Every asshole king does that. I'm not going to sit correctly. Yeah. Like, okay. Yeah. Look at you bucking tradition there.
Yeah. He hasn't done that much in a while, too. It's too bad. He's quite good.
Yeah. Or he hasn't done things that, like, people have seen.
Oh, he was in the Grand Budapest Hotel, which is actually really good. What's his name? The guy that makes the movies that we can't stand.
Sounds like everybody.
they're OR scrubs. Oh, are they?
Oh, Wes Anderson.
Yeah, like but that was a really good movie.
Oh, he's in the Young him. Pope. That's right.
Young Pope. He was in Sherlock Holmes. He was in, but the first one of that was really good. The second one wasn't not so good.
He was in. He was Watson in that, right?
Yeah, yeah. He was good, but he made a lot of movies.
Yeah, no, he's a lot. He's good. I like him.
Oh yeah, he's a fantastic actor, but he just makes some odd choices. He was, yeah. To me, he's still the guy from Gattaca, for Christ's sake.
Yeah, Gattaca. He was in Road to Perdition.
He played the. Oh, creepy. He was so good in Road to Perdition.
He was the creepy assassin in that.
He's one of those guys that started out as a lead actor, but was too talented to be a lead actor. And like he's handsome enough and he's British enough, but he also will play, you know, more complex characters.
I think
he'll make himself ugly to play
I think he's also, and this is not a knock because it's not like he's ugly by any means. I think he's unusual looking.
Yeah,
that he can look like a leading man, like he was the main guy in. I know, Sky Captain, The World of Tomorrow, which was not a terrible movie. But he's also odd enough that he could be, you know, the evil brother in a King Arthur movie. Like, he just has this look about him. Like, he can be kind of menacing, but silently in the background kind of thing.
Yeah.
So he can play, you know, side character. He's not Chris Pine, is what I'm saying.
Chris Pine
has a leading man look.
Right.
Sorry, everyone, if you don't look like Chris Pine. It's fine, I don't either.
We call it standard handsome man.
Yeah, right. Like you, like when you boot up your computer and you're loading a template, that's Chris Pine. you start with that.
Yeah,
and it's then like you change it as you go.
Yeah, it's like, you know what it is? It's like, yeah, it's like when you go to like Microsoft Word. And you're like, I'm going to write my resume. And you go into their templates for the resumes, and they're all garbage.
Yeah.
They're never going to work for you at all, but they're really handsome-looking resumes.
This is the Kevin Spacey template. I don't want this.
You know? And like Chris Pine's resume template is like, it's strong, and it's sleek-looking, and it's, you know, it's very attractive, but it's just not going to work for you because you have more information to put on there. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Really stretching this metaphor quite a bit. But you all know what I mean.
You get it, right? You get it? Okay.
Yeah.
Anyway.
All right. I think we've danced around this one for quite some time.
Yeah. So
he's not coming, everybody.
No, he's not going to be. Sorry, everyone.
Yeah.
But
maybe next time.
Hey, there's plenty of other summer movies.
Yeah. Next one up is Baywatch.
Yeah. Just not getting good reviews. But nothing.
Yeah. It's not going to be a good movie, but like, it's still going to have what it has in it. Like, I think people got excited, like, maybe this one will be good. No, you're thinking about it all wrong. It's not going to be good.
I think we got spoiled with 21 Jump Street because that was funny. And everyone thought that would be garbage. So.
Oh, no. This is going to be actual garbage, but like, it's. Like, it's a B movie, but it's an expensive B movie.
Hey, The Rock is in it. You can't go wrong with that.
The usually. Rock is a national treasure. Hey, Rock Hangs 2020.
Yeah. I'm going to get a shirt.
Oh, please.
So.
All right, everybody. Anything else we have to add?
No, I think we got it. The movie was a disappointing failure.
Interesting failure.
Interesting failure. And disappointing.
Excuse me. So, since we're done, you guys can stop this right now and then go over to the iTunes and give us that that 5-star rating that you've been itching to do the entire time. You don't have to leave a review, but if you want to, that'd be nice. I want to thank those of you who have reviewed the podcast. We really appreciate that. We've only gotten 5 stars so far, so I appreciate that tremendously. You want to follow us on Twitter? We're at the number 3 Drinks in Pod. That's at 3 Drinks in Pod, where you can find all of our exciting polls and Instagram and Facebook, and complaints, comments, questions, concerns sent to 3drinksinpodcast@gmail.com. That's it.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
See
okay.
See you all next time.
Indeed. As always, you should please drink responsibly. Mm-hmm. Oh, and enjoy the holiday weekend, everybody.
Yes, Memorial Day. Have a hot dog.
Indeed. Or 5.
Or 5.
They're delicious.
They are.
Okay.
All right. Take care.
Adios.